Greetings and welcome to Remedy Radio, the show that communicates solutions, helping you find, learn, and eventually teach remedies for life, love, liberty, and the achievement of both happiness and satisfaction for you and your loved ones. Removing your uncertainty and inspiring your curiosity.
Remedy Radio, Episode 9, is entitled, Sean the Farmer, Knowing Yourself Through the Food You Eat.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Remedy Radio, where communicating solutions is what we do. My name is Adam Dodds, along with my partners Paul Verge and Robert Christie. And today we have a special guest on the show where we would like to welcome our very dear friend from up north, Sean.
Welcome, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
So first, Sean, for people out there who are unfamiliar with some of your work, tell us a little bit about what you do.
What do I do? I try to express a message through the garden that our survival requires. People to know more about their food because they are our food. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
Just that you have to live the message that you're trying to say.
Yeah, because on Remedy Radio we talk a little bit about food, and we had actually a whole episode dedicated towards food and nutrition. Uh-huh. And I think that personally what you do is very inspiring to me, and it's led me to go on to visit your garden and your greenhouses. And it's really brought myself connected on a level that I never really knew existed. So how has some of the work that you do changed your life?
I think it's, I know it's made me stronger, because I used to go to the grocery store, even if when I got to the level of being organic, it didn't really matter. I was spending money and I was working for it. And here I know where the food comes from because I put my heart into the soil. And the soil grew my food, which grew me. So I've become much stronger. And every time someone clicks onto it, or that dawns on them, like you're saying, it inspired you because you saw the lush of your own yard that wasn't lawn, it was edible. That gives me strength too.
So whose viewpoints, I guess, had led you to this sort of concept of, I mean, it's been around for, you know, thousands of years, growing your own food, having a relationship with your food, and who has sort of geared you towards that sort of concept, movement?
Like specific people. More just backyard gardeners, but there's people who've started movements of permaculture where they're trying to reconnect this dastardly disconnection of what food is. Is that Rudolf Steiner, who started or reinvigorated the food movement and how to learn rather than engineer teaching. But I can't really think of many names of people, gardeners and farmers who became authors as well. But yeah, most of the people who do it in their backyards, we trade seeds, we trade, you know, methods.
But they don't necessarily promote widespread their own methods that they've cultivated over.
No, it's more a culture. Yeah. Their culture is more, if you were able to track how someone grows squash in cold climates from seed that came from Mexico, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's more the culture that they're delivering their way of growing.
So why do you believe that, you know, these types of concepts are important to bring back to our societies, our communities?
I'd say emotional well-being. And when you look at the world today and you assume that there's always going to be a grocery store full of food and you'll be safe and your family will be fine because they're fed, you're delusional, or you're under a delusion, right? And this gives you peace of mind because you at least won't starve. And as a Canadian person, you must realize that Canada's an illusion in that respect. So having a garden is sound practice.
Well, what was it back in the times where the depressions occurred? People who lived out in the country, people who grew their own food,
oh, sure.
who lived off the land, didn't necessarily feel the effect of...
Not necessarily, no.
Of you know, this so-called depression compared to people who were, you know, tightly packed into the cities and stuff, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, in that respect, I think there's a lot of, you know, people out there that are going back to that
uh-huh.
because they're drawn to it, because,
sure.
you know, it's given them more than what the grocery store has to offer, right? You know, being a farmer myself for probably going on about 6 years now, I've been able to see a plant grow from seed and then from seed to cultivation. So I totally understand where you're coming from, and it's, you know, we have a relationship with these plants. I mean, there's all kinds of yeah. books out there that'll tell you that it is important to have a relationship with a life form other than your own species, right? Whether it's a cat or a dog or,
yeah.
you know, a plant, you
yeah.
know? So on the show, we talk a little bit about critical thinking.
Yes.
And to you, what's important about critical thinking? Because I think this affects everybody, right? So.
Oh, sure. Critical thinking, it's that awareness that you're a human and you're not a cow, to put it on a bumper sticker, that you can think, that
uh-huh.
your thinking capacity doesn't end at what you're told, and that you think about what you're told and then you deliver what you're told to do. You can actually think outside the box that shouldn't be there, right? So if you ever hear the expression thinking outside the box, maybe you should get rid of the box and express your creative, right? Because a creative is a place no one has ever been, right? You're exploring, and you have to leave that city of your comfort into what's known as the wilderness of your intuition. You really have to, there can't be a box, there can't be anything. But yeah.
So some of the stuff that you've introduced to me in terms of like medicine, have you always been into that sort of stuff, or is it somebody that sort of...
It was more intuition, actually.
Really, eh?
I remember my first pack of seeds came with a... What was it? It was a pack of random seeds. Came with a product, some sort of thing, and they would give out seeds. And one of them turned out to be my favorite, or one of my favorites, called the calendula. And it was in there, it's a gorgeous little daisy flower, but you could eat it or make medicine from it. And from just learning about the one plant, I had to learn about all of them, because that's how my mind focuses. I had to get to know them all, which has taken years, and it's been years of fun. So calendula started me off in this random packet. Probably, oh, I know what it was. Bayer aspirin. It was, it had the logo, and they had a packet of random seeds of wildflowers, and calendula was it.
Yeah. Mm.
Calendula is basically antithesis to Bayer, which is... I just caught on the irony.
What are some of the things that calendula does to individuals?
Calendula. The Romans knew that this was a cancer plant. So you can make a topical application and it would alleviate your skin cancer at least. But it's antibacterial and antiviral. And as long as you know that one is an alcohol process and one's a water process, you can have both and then combine them.
Hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Very powerful plant.
So taking a walk inside your greenhouse, I noticed you had a lot of different types of plants.
Yeah.
What are some of the other types of plants that you have?
Well, in the spring, we started with lots of greens, just tons of greens to replenish after a winter of chowing down on dry greens. There's too many types of greens to mention, but some of the herbs, like the rosemary... You know, you get to know the qualities of these Mediterranean plants. You need a greenhouse when you're hitting 40 below in the winters, right? What else do we have? Too many. I should have brought a list.
Well, you've got your kales, obviously, yeah. Your tomatoes.
Different kales, tomatoes.
And you do companion gardening?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So what's the benefits of companion gardening versus traditional? Well, it's like
having a... as you were saying before, beings need to interact with other beings. And some of the root systems help with the other root systems, such as yarrow. You take a yarrow plant, it's ubiquitous, it's everywhere, out in the, at least in the high altitude. And what it does to your mint plant, say, is increase the oil, the beneficial oils, the volatile oils in each of the leaves. Because something in the roots, they get along. Carrots do good with tomatoes. It's extraordinary. Yeah.
So like when I first started getting into gardening, you notice that, you know, you get soil. Then you would start by planting, what, potatoes? And then you start loosening the soil. And then
break it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Conditioner.
Then,
yeah.
Right, and then the second year, you would plant tomatoes.
No, that's the second year because they're the same family.
Right, okay.
You want to rotate a little different than that, maybe peas and then cabbage.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about your garden because this I... I really love the garden, and every time I'm up there, I feel very connected and you know, part of it all. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what you do and the importance of what you do and how it affects everybody and how everybody can actually do this type of work, right? So,
yes.
So stick with us. We'll be back on Remedy Radio, Communicating Solutions.
Welcome back to Remedy Radio, where we're talking about gardening and reconnecting with our food and the land with our friend Sean. Welcome back.
Cool. So where we left off was a little bit about what you should plant first, what you should plant second. And this isn't cast in stone. You can always experiment,
of course.
From what I understand, depending on your soil, depending on what types of plants you're planting in your soil.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah. So... after potatoes, just out of curiosity, what would you plant, depending on the soil that you have?
I like the fava beans.
Yeah, for sure.
Which are like this giant pea, right? So they really fix atmospheric nitrogen into the soil. So I can actually plant either with the potatoes, like along the edges, so you can heal your potatoes up still, or a rotation of favas in the fall. So if you don't actually get a crop out of it, at least you boosted your soil for the spring, right?
Right.
And it can be a nice green manure because it's substantial. It's not just like loose vines like alfalfa. It's got something to it.
So for people out there who've never actually planted a garden, all this kind of stuff can seem a little overwhelming.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? But it starts slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it starts with a little bit of curiosity. Plant a little herb garden. You know, and then eventually move a little bit more towards, you know, some fruit-bearing tree or, you know, plants and have fun with it, right?
Well, if nothing else.
Well, you mentioned back there using the beans to fix nitrogen.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear that a lot.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean to fix the nitrogen in the soil?
The process is a symbiotic relationship with these bacterial nodules that fix to the roots. And then they draw the nitrogen from the atmosphere, so it's accessible to other plants, including the host plant. So when the plant dies back, it's still ready and available for the next planting. It just means that you don't have to feed it as much inputs, whether it's organic or not, that you do less work. And it's less, I'd say, stressful because you're not introducing foreign things to build your soil to make it healthy. The plants are doing that for themselves.
Mm. Uh-huh. And they leave behind stuff too, right? Like you were just saying, you would plant something, it sucks something from the soil, but it also leaves behind stuff into the soil, so that that's sort of where the relationship between different plants occur, right? So you would have, you know, your kales would feed off of your tomatoes, if I'm not mistaken, right? Or your... you know, your soil has to be to a certain condition before you would... So how would you measure your soil? Would you just sort of go by touch, by feel?
Yeah, touch and feel. If you grasp a clump of it and it just crumbles, maybe it's too sandy, you have to add a bit of loamy
loaminess or some broken up leaf mold. Yeah, you really have to touch the soil. I've seen people who like to eat their soil. I haven't gone that far yet. But then you can tell if there's too much clay, then it's going to bog down certain kinds of roots, and then you won't get a crop at all, and you're susceptible to fly maggots and such. And you just become disappointed because you didn't quite read your terrain right.
Mm. Yeah. So there's a couple books out there that talk a little bit about how human interaction with plants actually will dictate how well the plant is doing and
oh, yeah.
And you know, versus a mechanical arm spraying and stuff, right?
Right.
So how is it that plants can feed off of humans and humans can feed off of plants, like in terms of like what is it that a human can do to be able to I guess improve the quality of life of their plant, right?
I've never asked my plants that. But I can imagine these beings, they're just taken for granted, not for granted, that they couldn't possibly have anything more than just being a plant, and they don't react to our electrical impulses or anything. It's a broad assumption, but I haven't really looked into it more than that one book, Secret Life of Plants. I just started that, so I haven't really developed, but I'm sure Rob would have a more inclination to on that question, like actually, because mm-hmm. I haven't looked into it too much.
What's The Secret Life of Plants?
It's a book written by Christopher Bird.
You've read that one? Yeah.
I've read parts of it.
Yeah.
I've read his other book, which had nothing to do with plants, but
yeah.
Equally captivating. But it's referenced a lot, right? So when you're dealing with plants and consciousness, so yeah, where they allegedly did studies on philodendrons, where they hooked them up to machines, the EKGs or whatever they are, mm-hmm. the ones that can measure
yeah.
certain magnetic frequencies or electric frequencies, right? So when you would approach a plant with an intention to do harm, the machines would read that, right? So they would be able to pick up. The plant would be able to pick up, right? So if you, there was like dumping coffee on it. So if you dump coffee on it, it was like, yeah, it's not going to kill me. But if you walked up with a lighter or
scissors
or something,
yeah.
It was like, no. Screaming, really,
they could
screaming
read,
silently.
Read their wow. your intent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, essentially. So that's.
So yeah, there's got to be something to it. People play their music in greenhouses and seem to get some sort of effect. And rock music is too much, and classical, jazzy style with rhythms does great.
It promotes the
lush.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. they're for sure. They're respected. And I'm not sure if it's a frequency, and can't say it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it has your decision to kind of be self-sufficient been spurned by just your own necessity or out of like an awareness of the encroaching kind of state control and control of the food supply?
Yeah, the awareness. When it finally clicks on in your head, this might not be here, because other nations, countries in the past, republics, have had to come in with wheelbarrows of cash just to get a loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because the illusion of Canada is so strong doesn't mean it's not possible. So that's what did it. I just knew too much and figured you can't do it in the city very well. Got to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Got to start doing it. Yeah, practice.
Yeah. Let's see.
So I guess then that would raise the question, how much do you value self-sufficiency, you know, versus, you know,
being dependent?
Yeah, being dependent. It's, in your case, it's huge, right?
Sure, it's sustenance living. But it's also that emotional level where you more greatly appreciate how other people, in fact, billions of other people, have to live or they don't get to exist. So choosing poverty isn't such a harsh thing. But being imposed impoverishment is. And it feels grounded to live like that.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say it's interesting. I mean, that you made a good point there. That, you know, like the imposed poverty, but we just look at it as it's from our cultural perspective, the
way you live is
seen as poverty. But from our perspective, there's a richness that most of us will never know.
Uh-huh.
Right? Be able to go and get your own veggies and work with that soil and have that relationship.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different thing when it's being forced upon you. Right?
Sure.
So if you're being forced to grow your own veggies, and I mean, the life we've created is pretty nice, but it's going to be keeping that.
Well, there's a cost, a hidden cost that we don't always take into consideration, and I think living the way that you are right now, it brings it about...
Part of the illusion.
It's a greater sense of responsibility, but also a greater sense of freedom, because you're not dependent on the state for your food. You're not dependent on the supply chain to be able to put something in your stomach, and everything that you are putting in your mouth, you at least know where it's been, where it's come from, what the origins are, and probably had a hand in it yourself.
Uh-huh.
And there's a sense of, I don't know, empowerment or freedom that comes along with that, because you don't have to worry now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Compared to people who are going to grocery stores increasingly hoping that the food that they're buying is not tainted or from some place where it's, you know, got hidden ingredients that are going to harm them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ingredients within ingredients.
Exactly.
Yeah, so when I do participate in a store, it's a critical moment of choice at the shelf leads me to buy it, and is it worth my labor? If I had to go and earn a couple bucks, I want to spend it, because I'm eating with my spirit, in a way, not just my tongue.
And you're voting with your fork?
Another bumper sticker.
Very thought-provoking. You know, to know that there is alternatives out there. I mean, there was a stat out there that it's roughly one farmer per every 30 individuals, right? And, you know, that stat, you know, really resonated with me when I'm saying, okay, well, I'm dependent on one farmer to be able to, you know. And then there was another stat that said another acre of grain will feed one individual, right?
Average appetites, yeah.
Average appetites, right? So, you know, you have your... You have your, you know, acre or so of fruit-bearing plants and root and tube species like potatoes and your, you know, but then, you know, you would have...
A hectare of ocean.
Yeah.
You know, all this.
Yeah. And it all works sort of, I guess the word is symbiotically.
Yeah, depending on how it's balanced. But we should talk about aquaponics and stuff when we... come back from this break on Remedy Radio. Thank you for sticking with us. And we're back on this special episode of Remedy Radio, where we communicate solutions. And our guest today is Sean. Sean works growing his own food, works doing farming and conscious agriculture, I guess you could call it.
Sure.
And he's sharing some of his wisdom and his experiences with us today. So,
yeah, well, we recently discovered a system called aquaponics. After checking it out, it seemed pretty interesting. There's a lot of variables. There's a lot of potentials. It's still, I guess, in its growing and developing stage. It's been around for, you know, thousands of years. The Mayans used to do it. There's a whole bunch of different cultures that used to participate in that type of growing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about that kind of stuff, Sean? Or
not in the history of it, but when you see the Mayans, you see renderings where they grew their corn on these islands. So they had they were growing their fish, not so much in tanks, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was more a living system. But yeah, that's totally possible. In fact, necessary with the toilet that the crapper the oceans become. And I think I'd rather have a tank of fish in a nice setup, and then use their excrement for the garden rather than have chickens.
So explain to people at home how exactly aquaponics works. It's
basically, I mean, yeah. I've only looked into it as much as you, probably you more, just because time looking on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. But I've seen a few models, and some are sterile. You know, they're university sort of, what do you call it?
Lab environment.
Lab environment kind of things, just to see. I guess they need a baseline,
yeah,
right? And then there's other ones, you know, they just use big tanks and they filter it through, and it's very basic, and there's no additives and stuff like that. But I could see doing it outside under greenhouses in you know, self-dug ponds with you use a horse manure to gum down the lining instead of using plastic and all that kind of stuff. And then just use elevations to like gravity feed to the next tank to the next tank to your garden rather than being so complex about that.
So it's basically a closed-loop system.
A closed-loop system,
right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So your fish will feed your plants, and then you can add different types of species into the mix,
right.
like shrimp.
Yeah, you're trying to go for, I would think, more of your bottom feeders, like or your small, because you don't want carnivorous ones, because they're too active,
mm-hmm.
they're harder to feed, they need a bit more inputs. So get used to catfish, get used to tilapia and other things that you mm-hmm. could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
That's more like having, likened to having poultry.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with that, but they have a viral load that's too much for humans.
It's kind of like playing like a Command and Conquer or a, you know, what's that StarCraft game where you have to build little resources, right?
Okay.
Balance everything against
then,
each other.
Yeah, okay. And then you know you have this system that works perfectly, but you know there's obviously kinks to work out at the start, just
okay.
like any other
Always.
Garden, right?
Yeah.
You know,
environmental variables and yeah, all kinds of things you'd have to program. But I thought aquaponics looked like an interesting way of balancing both. You know, having some fish and using their waste as you know, fertilizer for the vegetables
uh-huh.
that you're growing, and having that all work together like a mini ecosystem.
You're right.
And in a sense, it would be scalable, I guess, because
mm-hmm,
you know, if you've got a working model, you can double it or triple it or grow it in size. And as long as you've got the environmental controls under control, then you know you can
control the controls.
I'd be interested to see how many people. It sustains, you know, a one model kind of thing. If it takes care of 5 or 20 or 50 people,
well, I think it's diverse. I mean, the chicken thing. Even in cities, they're being allowed to have a few chickens,
mm-hmm.
right? But the chicken problem is, unless you, they're not productive after a couple of years for your eggs, and then you have to eat the meat, and they're loud, they're stucky, and they follow you around. Yeah, I don't know. They can destroy your garden too if you let them go and they go weeding and. Slugging, and you know, getting the slugs, and fish are just docile and
short memories.
Have their own kind of character, right? Yeah.
I figure the whole worm composting should be able to
worm farms
eat
yeah.
some trout. You know.
Oh yeah, for sure.
If you didn't
eat
carnivorous ones,
yeah. So you can take it to levels.
Yeah, because that's what I've been thinking about here. What we could grow, right? And if I do it, I'm like, well, I could. Do some warm fish, but then you actually got to heat the greenhouse.
Yeah.
So if something
yeah, yeah.
happens, then you're
yeah,
you
have to
kill them all, right? But if I do trout,
yeah.
then you can let it get down to a certain temperature, at least
you
where the greens
survive.
And all the kale
yeah.
and all the stuff will grow all winter, right? You
yeah.
get that stuff growing.
Yeah,
then it's not a huge.
So it's flexible then. It's not a one size fits all
solution.
It
seems flexible, yeah.
Yeah. So well, I think because trout, I think it's about all we can do here. And if it gets, if it does freeze, they're not going to die, right?
Yeah.
Or perch,
yeah.
or
yeah.
So
that's
the beauty.
I haven't researched enough to know what other kinds of fish we've got options for here. Cold water fish. But,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Cold, yeah.
Anyway.
That's the curiosity all about it, right?
Yeah. We found where to get the containers, though. So I'm going to try the...
IBCs?
Build a little one.
Little model?
Just a little model. Try it.
Just
yeah.
to see, and then... Well, there's some videos out there that explain that you can actually do it commercially.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how sustainable it is, or I don't know what the process
oh,
is.
Oh, sure. I'm sure you could do a warehouse on top of, you know, levels and levels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can do...
So if you get into the indoor thing, if you got into indoor doing it, you could really go crazy with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I've seen there's a lot of informational videos and stuff online that show just different examples of people doing their own things, and tons of them have flaws and different things you'll see right through where you're like, oh, I wouldn't do it that way.
yeah, yeah.
But it's just people sharing their experiments, essentially.
Right. Right.
So don't take any particular model as the working model. It's all kind of an open source gardening in a way, right?
You're just going to say, take the pieces you need.
Yeah, and the pieces that appear to work.
Doing it for the longest,
yeah.
too, because
yeah.
they've gone through most of those bugs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to reinvent the whole
and some thing. And some of those older models, like you were mentioning just way back, they knew how to do that or try to do that, have ponds so that you can have the fish that are harder to catch. Mm-hmm. Maybe even dangerous to catch, whatever. Corn, squash, beans, and then have fish swimming around, and you never have to feed your plants because it all just kind of goes in there.
Yeah.
Less work, right? You get to do more stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of mental clarity, then, how do you see food and nutrition playing a role in your physical health?
It's like knowing how to change your own battery. You grow good soil, you grow excellent food, you have friends to help you, and you become... You don't sink into doldrums or because you're energized, because you are your food.
The meter keeps saying full, so to speak, right?
Or can, yeah. And you know, it because your food satiates your body sooner than supermarket food, which is full of volumizers, bulkers, and water, and the nutrition is less. So if you were to think about, say you had a budget of only a few $100 a month for you and your family for food, knowing that something is organic and has nutrition is better than buying what you'd have to replace it with, 3 or 4 times of the standard food. But most people don't realize it just fills their stomach.
Yeah.
But it doesn't fill their body, their electrical impulses, so they can't really have clear thought.
Yeah. So you see an apple, right?
Yes.
But it's just the shell of an apple. But it looks...
It's the shape of an apple.
Yeah.
And there's still some things left in it. But, you know, vitamins are down. There's still minerals. I mean, that's a different... A mineral assay? Minerals are different, but vitamins are down. Potatoes have almost no vitamin A left. Or keratin or whatever. All these vegetables that 100 years ago were superfoods are now cardboard.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So we see potatoes and we see 4 or 5 different types of varieties at the store, but the reality of it is there's, you know, hundreds.
There's thousands.
Thousands of different types.
And there's the corporations are trying to chop our food structure down to, you know, one kind of grain, one kind of tuber, one kind of this, and, you know, 4 kinds of meat, and slop.
So I guess they...
Flavored slop.
So would you consider yourself vegetarian or...
No, I consciously consider myself a selective omnivore. I choose. I mean, I don't want to deny... I've been meat-free, but I was never vegetarian. I've been completely raw, but it's my psyche of not having an ism in my head. Like
right.
All those boxes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right?
Perfect.
But now the ocean's a crapper. So... This is going to be the last year I eat salmon out of the ocean because of the meltdowns and all this other shit going on.
Huh.
So back to aquaponics.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's, you know, it's like for us, or for me, like my journey went, you know, just regular, whatever, I grew up with food. And then once you start eating different food, especially organic food, and then you go to, when you start going to farmers markets and you start actually getting food that's like was picked that day or day before or whatever, and it lasts for a few weeks in your thing, and then it starts to look what you get in the supermarket, you're like, oh wow, it's been already sitting for 2 weeks.
That's right.
By the time I got it,
that's right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then you taste it, even in our water, right?
Yeah.
We've been going to the spring now for about a year, mm-hmm. and it's so much different than everything that's packaged and delivered to us.
Yeah.
Is crap, pretty much, right? And you go get your own stuff, it's way better.
Yeah.
And you can taste it.
Supermarkets pick things unripe.
Yeah.
And rely on the last little bit of living structure to ripen. I mean, bananas are different because they're an herb, right? They ripen at a different rate.
Mm-hmm.
And apples that were green, that are ripened in the spring, taste like crap. It tastes like the tree I have in the backyard. Which isn't saying it's a bad tree, it's just that our zone is not meant for that tree.
Yeah.
But
well,
it's a juicy tree.
Absolutely. And people, you know, we've been so used to having lower quality goods that we're not we don't know what good stuff is. But we'll talk more about that when we come back from this break on Remedy Radio, Communicating Solutions.
Stick with us. Thanks for sticking with us, folks. Welcome back to Remily Radio. Remedy Radio, not Remily. Remedy Radio, where we've got Sean in the house.
Remily Radio.
He's talking to us a little bit about growing your own food and how important it is and why it's important and what benefits it can bring to your life.
Yeah, and how processed food kind of blows. And I thought a lot of people, like one of the things I learned recently about why raw food is so good and so highly nutritious is because of the fact it has its enzymes still alive as compared to food that you're getting in the supermarket that's, sure, like you said, 2 to 3 weeks old. Enzymes are finally dying off.
Yeah.
And, you know,
they've broken down to beyond the point.
So what things about enzymes do you think people might have misconceptions or non-understanding of?
That they exist. that they're necessary to break down food. Because you leave an apple on the counter of whatever variety, it could stay there for a while. And I mean, I had a box of apples in my basement, nice and cool, and they were crunchy for 6 months, but they had good sugar, right? But if you put a nick in that apple, it would shrivel up faster. I don't know where the hell I was going with that.
Well, how the enzymes...
Yes, right, the enzymes. They break down on themselves, right? Most people don't even know what that
so is. So, indigestion or... Right.
Well, maybe really what it is they actually have our best interest at heart, because we know how they do, right? So what they're doing, it's like the 28-day aged meat, mm-hmm, right? They have to let it putrefy for a while before you can actually start to eat it, right? That's right. Why it's
nasty.
Aged, to let it start to...
Favor.
Those enzymes are breaking the meat down for you, so mm-hmm, that by the time you get it, it's already rotten. So maybe that's what they're doing with the vegetables, right, and stuff, too. They're actually doing us a favor by getting...
No, they're just lazy.
That's almost rotten.
No, it's incidental.
Easy to break down.
I'm sorry, it's incidental.
Yeah.
But,
all right, maybe.
Yeah.
Supply chain.
I'm not sure where I read the reaction of cooked food. Your body puts up... It mounts a defense of unrecognizable particles and floods your system with white blood cells to take care of this. And by the end of, like, by midlife, you've exhausted yourself because you're always on the defense. Yeah. But with the raw food, the living enzyme is there to participate with your being rather than always overtaxing it.
So cooked foods take from...
They suck your energy out.
Yeah, your body looks at it as like a poison or an invader.
And yet some things need to be cooked a little because you can't digest it without breaking it down somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to know your food. You can't just everything raw.
Well, it's like with nuts, you got to soak them, right?
Yeah, you got to soak them.
When we went raw.
Like raw peanuts, I read, you have to soak them a bit. Yeah. Or lightly roast them or something, right? You can't just pop everything raw.
I didn't think peanuts were that good of a food to begin with. Don't they have...
I think they taste great.
Yeah.
Peanuts. I think brought to you by Remedy Radio.
Yes. Why they roast peanuts? Probably because they're always in piles of hundreds of tons and the aflatoxin and rat feces is in there. So they got to roast all that bad stuff away.
Okay. Cancel what I said. Unless you're an elephant in the audience.
But if you add white sugar and put it in a whipped up jar, that's good. It's okay.
It's good.
Well,
to
actually,
on
the you can get like these jungle peanuts that you get like in the raw food where you can find online or whatever, and they're like striped and they look like tigers.
Huh.
And they are actually some tasty
nuts.
Yeah, but they're like collected in the jungle somewhere.
Right.
I don't know where they
are. They salted nuts?
I don't know, but they're tasty. But the other thing is that all the peanuts we get, they're rotated with cotton, and cotton's highly industrialized, chemicalized,
GMO'd,
toxified, good stuff. Anyway, it's good we're wearing it. See, nice. And so
it's become part of our terminology. Ooh, is that GMO'd?
GMO'd. Yeah, with a repulsive look. A lot of people get confused by the terms processed versus prepared. And, like raw food usually isn't processed, where it's either been cooked or shredded or mixed or something.
Yeah.
Whereas preparation is like soaking your nuts and doing something where
something
it still keeps
its
like status with the enzymes alive. So, in terms of extracting nutrients and how the body breaks things down, do you think people should concentrate on eating their food the right way or taking additional digestive enzymes to help break down or make that transition?
I guess it would depend on your constitution. Some people do need that extra enzyme or just the food combining. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I was thinking about yesterday was you could have the best food, but if you don't eat it right, what does it matter? If you eat your organic cow because you have the share and you eat meat and your family eats meat, but then you don't shoot enough and then you have apples for dessert, your apples are going to make it out of you before that meat does, and you just wasted all that energy and you're not going to absorb all of that. Yeah. So like you're saying, knowing how to eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then soaking your nuts, the reason why is because
it activates.
It activates, and it also strips, from what my understanding is a natural preservative that's found on the nut.
Inhibitors, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so
it's the skin. So the skin's got inhibitors that protect the seed from all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
And from sprouting and from,
yeah. Yeah. From natural environment, mold, mildew, cold, heat, all that kind of stuff, right? So if you eat the nut without actually soaking it, what you're doing is you're taking in these natural preservatives that really impedes the process of digestion, right? Because it's a preservative, right?
Yeah, we didn't learn that for the first few months of becoming raw. We were eating all these, eating the dates. You go to take a date and you stick an almond in there or almond butter and that. And that's like
super
amazing
good
stuff. But
it tastes great.
Yeah, but it hurts out.
But you got to prepare it properly.
Yeah, preparation, yeah.
So once we figured out the soaking thing, it was like, oh, okay. Changes the whole game.
Yeah, and after you soak it, you would dehydrate it, right? And then it actually changes the physical...
Oh, yeah, for sure. You begin constructing vitamins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything's changing.
And it pops in your mouth. Like an almond that's been soaked and dehydrated, you put it in your mouth and it actually pops. And it's like, you know, and you actually feel it, right?
Right.
Versus an unsoaked almond in a raw form that is actually more of an oily substance, you know, and it's harder, it's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mastication.
Mm-hmm.
Because those oils are good, right? You need some of those, mm-hmm. those oils.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think one of the bigger reasons people have such problems with both their health and their weight is that they don't chew enough and they don't drink enough water? Like, what would...
That's one for sure.
And that's one reason.
And how do you convince them? Like, how do you make it logical that, like, hey, these are the two reasons why you need to do these things?
Yeah, right.
How would you explain it to someone?
How long do you want to live on the same budget? I don't know. How do you convince a person who doesn't have, who's what, spending 30% of their monies on food, that they could spend either less or just as much but get more out of it? And then start to shed off the excess stuff because they're just chewing better.
Yeah, I got a friend of mine that I won't name his name.
Hey,
he'll go to the store and spend something and say,
"Rob chooses food." Yeah,
it's cheaper, and you know, and it's like,
what's the difference between quality versus quantity?
Right.
It's when people think that they're getting more, but it's like cardboard, as opposed to getting the quality of.
And spending the extra 30 cents, you know, or dollar, or whatever the amount is, mm-hmm. right? Like, for me, there is no price for food. I'll pay whatever it takes to get a quality piece of food.
Or grow your own.
Or grow my own, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's knowing your appetite. It's knowing that you used to have this appetite, and it consisted of everything, and then you change dedicatedly to all organic. And even mm-hmm. if it's a monoculture of some of the stuff, a different topic, you know that you're going to get your nutrition because you're spending more, but you're buying less.
Right.
And it equals out.
Yeah.
But then you know that you're not going to have, you don't have to eat more. You know what I mean? You don't have to triple your budget in your food just because you're buying organic now.
Yeah.
When you're eating nutritious food, you're actually full, as opposed to if you ate, like, you know, McDonald's or
A&W there's triggers. Or something. The triggers are still intact to say, full.
Yeah.
But you have to consciously stop at, you know, 80% full. That's the key to longevity, to, you know, retire for the night
mm-hmm.
almost hungry, not starving, you know, but
let your digested system take a break when you sleep.
Yeah.
Another point on the enzymes, too, it's good to, if you are eating cooked food, which most people are eating, then you do actually want to take enzymes because we're not getting any because they've all been cooked out of your food.
Right.
So it's good for people, and if you are on a mostly raw diet or you eat mostly raw food, when you do eat cooked food, it's good to supplement at that time with some enzymes just to help the whole
transition.
So, on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to find out a little bit more about what Sean does to relax and to unwind. So, stick with us. We'll be back in just a second.
All right, welcome back to Remedy Radio. Thanks for joining with us with our friend Sean, who we're talking about food self-sufficiency and food autonomy. So we're going to talk into what relaxes you, Sean. And one of the things I wanted to ask too, for most people, I think, because we spend most of our days working, what we're working for is to feed ourselves. How much time do you actually spend? Now I know, I'm not sure how many people you have helping or whatever at any given time. So how much time do you spend in the garden, and how much time do you see it taking if there was a community of people and people were actually working together to feed themselves? How much time are you actually spending in the garden working, other than just enjoying your garden? How much are you actually spending to survive, do you think?
Depending on what time of the season. You know, like in the spring, it's 5-6 hours a day for preparing and doing flats and getting it going and keeping the moisture up, right? But then once it gets going and it's lush, you really only have to go out there because you're hungry. And it takes care of itself until you find an empty spot because it's harvested, and you do a little bit. So it scales down from several hours to nothing, where you can do your the rest of your life. You can do stuff. You can read more. You can explore more creatively.
So do you stagger? Like when you grow your food, do you like... You know, a week you'll plant some kale, and then 2 weeks from now
do little waves.
Some more.
Yeah, okay. Like say I want like the radishes. They only take 5 weeks to get a nice radish. So you do a bunch and you do them amongst other things that grow later. Mm. And then when those are done, you do another one, or actually in between. You know, after 2 weeks you do some more. So yeah, you do a waves of foods that you use all the time. Yeah, things like that.
The tastiest salad I've ever had was from Sean's garden, by the way. So,
yeah, for sure. I tell people when they start to come there that their responsibility is eating a pound a day because I need the help trimming it down.
So you can basically just before go graze, right?
Yeah, that's right. Before I came down, I mean, a few days before I came down, on the one bank, the first greenhouse, I chopped out about 50 pounds of greens and just did rows of on trays. Just so we have greens in the house for the winter. So there are trays of just chickweed and trays of everything else.
So you dehydrate them, or?
It's so lush in there. I just chopped it right down.
Yeah.
I gave it chopped off all the ends, so there's no soil. Uh-huh. But we're not big manure users in there, so it's not. And then chop it up in chunks and make furrows on these pans that we have. These 1x2 pans on shelves that were meant for bakery, and then we have a fan on that, so you just chop it up fine and make little rows, and a few days later, end of the week, put them in a bucket, all nice and dry, and you know you have your some vitamins and your minerals for the winter. Yeah,
so you can make soups kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I see.
And if you're able to grow some salads in the winter under cold frames, at least you have all these other varieties. Because they dry great, like chard and kale. They keep all their vitality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for how much time, it's elastic. But in the beginning, there's lots. Mm-hmm. And when more people come, for sure, like it's just for the spring planting, it was myself and one other, and we're all friends, right? Mm-hmm. And we just take on all the responsibilities because the two of us have the inclination to work in the garden or work in the house or work on a construction project or renovation like ants. you know, we'll do a little bit of gardening and then we'll go do a project for the rest of the day, or, you know, back and forth, so that something of everything gets done, and that may be seem a little exhausting after months and months, and with more people you can relax. So when I go back and there's a house full of people, it's going to be relaxing.
Share the load.
For sure. Yeah, right. Sure, that's right. Share the load.
So, going on the relaxed question, what do you do to unwind? Like, what do you... What's your remedy, so to speak, if garden isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, gardening is, you know, is everything, in a way. I mean, it's growing my food, because I need to grow food. But it's also the touchstone of a spiritual grounding, where I acknowledge the radiance of the universe and the sun making food to create me, so I help create myself, right? And then on other levels, it's forgiving, so you feel excellent for forgiving food. And relaxing, I find interesting things to read that are provocative from other minds. Some people just give good talks or tell good stories, and those are good to wash yourself with. Or poetry, I guess you can call it poetry. I think we'll end this whole session with a poet, like a little piece that I brought here somewhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that kind of thing. Drawings that I always anticipate making into paintings, but never have enough time to. So back to the community and sharing the load, I'm going to be able to turn my doodles and my little scapes into larger pieces that can become a better voice, because it's been lacking for a few years.
Sweet. Well, it'll be something we all get to enjoy too.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, for sure. I brought a small portfolio to show some friends back home, because I miss touching with their creative, and that's why I left. I needed a sabbatical from my sabbatical.
That's great. So do you have that poem with you today, or?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if you want to call it up as a... I would read it over top of a photograph. It sort mm-hmm. of touches on.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll do voiceover later.
Sure. Okay. And then at the end of the poem,
well, what we can do is we can take pictures. Right.
Well, yeah, we're gonna scan all that stuff.
Yeah, and yeah. So every once in a while, you throw up one of those poster things, because cool. that's part of my creative mm-hmm. of trying to instill in words as few as possible to shake people's mind up. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but just like briefly, just long enough.
Yeah, like a 5 second.
Yeah, 5 seconds.
Comes up behind you. Some, and stuff.
And people can pause. People.
Yeah, of course.
I always.
They'll be interested.
Yeah, I always pause too.
Okay, so then when we come back from the poem, then we can have like an outro, I guess.
Sure.
And wrap it up.
Cool.
So, well, thanks for sharing that with us, Sean.
Oh, for sure.
And did you guys have any other questions before we end this episode of Remedy Radio?
When can I go up and have a quick salad?
A quick salad?
Yeah. I guess in a month or two, right?
Yeah, it's up to you. It's your schedule.
Yeah, cool.
Bring a tent. Yeah. I have left space for tents. Remember where you guys were last time?
Yeah.
But it's narrower. I do work potatoes. yeah.
Cool.
Transforming the whole land there.
Right on.
Awesome. Well, Sean, really appreciate your time today and joining us in studio.
Well, thank you for facilitating this.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's our pleasure.
Excellent efforts.
Thank you, Sean. It's good to get your perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, and we wish you all the best in all your future growing endeavors.
And safe travels, because you're going for a couple weeks on a sabbatical, you're saying?
A couple weeks, yeah.
Visit some friends?
Yep, that's right.
Cool.
All right. Well, we also thank our audience for joining us today, and you know, we implore you to check out remedyradio.com and some of our partner and affiliate sites like pharmaseed.com, tragedyandhope.com, and there's many others that you can find in the description and show notes.
Uh-huh. And I would go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just one concept of global participation is a concept called biochar, and or terra preta, the black earth, and this is going to increase yields and sequester carbon. So if you go to biochar and just run through the litany, and we can put some links on at the end.
People can check that out.
People can check that out.
I guess we should ask too, is there anything else that you would like people to be directed to? Do you guys have any websites or anything?
Yeah, we don't have time to do the websites. And
too busy growing?
We almost don't trust having internet presence, a footprint on the internet, and being monitored in that way. I like old school postcards and telephone calls.
This is as high tech as it gets.
This is that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
You're my
bridge the gap.
You foster this, and I participate.
Cool, man. Well, then, on that note, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll check in with you at a later time.
Yes.
All right. Peace, everybody.
Peace out.
Peace out.